Sarah finished with the last customer of the day and proceeded to lock up the general store. Ed and Pig Jackson had been so impressed with her work that they were now giving her almost complete authority in the running of the store when they weren't there. Pig had grown to like her so much, she'd even been hinting that if Sarah would like to attend Sunday services at their church, there was some interest in single men she'd like to introduce her to. When Sarah had finished putting the money and the charge slips into the drawer behind the counter and extinguished all the lanterns, she stepped out the back door and pulled it shut behind her, turning a key in the lock. Moving quickly, she walked down the alleyway to the buckboard she'd put there in the early hours of the morning. She'd stolen the wagon from the livery stable the night before instead of just renting it. She didn't want anything pointing to her to give a posse or any of Jensen's friends any leads on where to look for him when he turned up missing. She wasn't sure just how she was going to handle getting Smoke Jensen under her control, but she knew she'd figure out something. She always had in the past. Her daddy had taught her well, never telling her how to do something, just telling her what he wanted accomplished and letting her figure out the best method to get it done. About the only thing that bothered her about what she was about to do was the thought of Sally Jensen and how it was going to affect her. She'd liked the lady from the first moment she'd met her, and Sally had been kind and considerate to her. It was a shame that Sarah was going to have to break her heart, but it couldn't be helped. Smoke Jensen was an evil man. He had to be, to have done what he'd done to her brother. She wondered how it was that an intelligent woman like Sally Jensen couldn't see how bad her husband was. She'd seen it before, women so besotted with love they took up with men no decent lady would even talk to, much less marry or fall in love with. She often saw these pathetic creatures when she went to town, where they walked around with heavy makeup on, trying to hide the bruises the brutes they'd married seemed to give them on a regular basis. She tried to salve her conscience by thinking how much better off Sally would be without a man like Smoke Jensen. Hell, he probably beat her when he got drunk, just like a lot of those men in Pueblo did to their wives. In time, Sally would probably thank her lucky stars that he was gone. Feeling better, Sarah turned her mind to ways she might be able to get the drop on Jensen without any of his hands or his wife knowing she was involved. Sally knew way too much about her, including the city she was from, to let her know she was involved. She needed to get the drop on Jensen and get him out to the trail without anyone from Big Rock realizing she had anything to do with it. She slipped her hand inside the purse lying on the wooden seat next to her and let her fingers curl over the walnut handle of the snub-nosed .38 caliber Smith & Wesson pistol that lay nestled there. Though she'd never shot anyone before, she knew she was capable of it, especially when she thought of how pale and shrunken her brother had looked in his coffin when they buried him out on the ranch where they'd both grown up. Her eyes filled with tears when she pictured Johnny lying there, looking somehow smaller than he had when he was alive and being his usual obnoxious self. Angrily wiping the tears away, she leaned forward and urged the horses on, anxious to do what needed to be done. She pulled the buckboard to a halt when she saw the lights from the Jensen's cabin through the trees. She knew from talking to Ed and Peg Jackson that the Jensens didn't have any dogs or chickens near the house to raise an alarm, so she shouldn't have any problem getting close to the house without being heard, just as long as she was careful. She wasn't sure what she'd do then, but figured she'd think of something. She always did. She climbed down off the buckboard and bent over, pulled the rear hem of her dress up between her legs and stuck it under her belt to make the dress look like trousers. She didn't want to get caught on any underbrush to leave traces of her having been there. She took her pistol out of the purse, stuck it under her belt and the small of her back, and began walking quietly toward the house in the distance, being as careful as she could so as not to step on any sticks or piles of leaves. When she got to the house, she moved over under one of the windows and slowly raised her head up to peek inside. She saw Smoke and Sally talking quietly together as they ate supper at the kitchen table. Occasionally, one or the other would smile and laughed softly at something the other said. Sarah pulled her head down and squatted under the window, wondering what she was going to do now. If worst came to worst and she didn't get another chance, she'd have to go inside the house and take them both, though she really didn't want to do that if there was any other way. Sally wasn't involved in this, and Sarah didn't want to have to scare her half to death. It'd be much better for the both of them if Jensen just disappeared and was never heard from again, and Sally never found out what happened to him. That way, maybe she'd think he'd just gotten tired of married life and run off to live alone somewhere.
I'm going to bed, dear. Are you coming?
Not just yet, sweetheart. I think I'll have a cigar out on the porch and another cup of coffee first.
Good night, then. I'll see you in the morning.
Unless I wake you up when I come to bed.
Don't you dare. Unless you plan to make it worth my while.
Oh, don't I always?
Smoke moved out onto the front porch with a coffee cup in his hand. Sarah waited until Smoke had finished half his cigar and most of his coffee, giving Sally time to get to sleep before she moved around and walked up to the porch. When Smoke noticed her, he got to his feet, a slight frown on his face.
Why, hello, Sarah. Something wrong?
Please, Mr. Jensen, come with me quickly. I need your help.
Let me just wake Sally up.
No, there's no time for that. Come quickly. My buckboard is just up the road a ways, and I have something in it you need to see.
Sarah turned around and moved at a fast pace down the road away from his house, not giving him time to think about it as he followed her down the dark path.
Is someone hurt?
Smoke caught up with her and walked by her side.
You'll see, it is just around the corner here.
When they came to the buckboard, Smoke leaned over the side, looking into the bed of the wagon. All he saw was a pile of blankets and some rope coiled up in the corner of the wagon.
I don't see...
Smoke turned around to find Sarah standing a few yards away with a pistol in her hand, aimed straight at his gut.
What the...
Kindly put your hands up, Mr. Jensen.
He took a tentative step toward her, and she eared back the hammer on the pistol.
Please, Mr. Jensen, don't make me shoot you here. Just do as I say, and you may live to see morning.
Smoke frowned as he raised his hands over his head.
Now turn around, climb back into the back of the buckboard.
Why don't you tell me what this is all about?
Don't you turn around. Just keep looking in that direction.
Is it all right if I ask you what this is all about?
Instead of answering him, Sarah reached under the seat of the buckboard and pulled out an iron crowbar she'd put there earlier. Swinging as hard as she could with one hand, she hit Smoke in the back of the head. Sarah put down her gun and climbed up into the wagon with him. Taking some short lengths of rope she'd prepared earlier, she tied his hands together behind his back and then tied his feet together. Once that was done, she took some fence wire and wound it tightly around the rope so that he couldn't possibly undo the knot she'd tied. When she was finished, she noticed blood was pouring from a wound in the back of his head, so she took a handkerchief from her purse and tied a makeshift bandage around his head to slow the bleeding. Once it stopped, she checked to make sure he was still breathing. After all, she didn't want him to die on her. That would be too easy. She wanted him to suffer for a while. And then she wanted him to know why he was being killed before he died. She wanted him to know that killing her brother Johnny had caused his death. She had to hurry. She wanted to be a dozen miles away before Sally Jensen woke up tomorrow morning and found her husband missing. By the time the alarm was raised and they figured out what had happened, she should be almost home. Moving as fast as she could over the road in the near-total blackness, Sarah took almost 3 hours to make her way to the outskirts of Big Rock. where she hoped to find the men from her father's ranch waiting for, along with Carl and Mac. It had been 3 full days since she'd sent Mac and Carl out to wait for him, so the men certainly should have been able to make the trip from Pueblo to here in that time. Even looking for him and expecting to see him, Sarah almost jumped out of her heavy coat she was wearing when a dark figure materialized out of the darkness and grabbed the reins to the horses pulling the buckboard.
Is that you, Miss Sarah?
Yes, who are you?
I'm Jimmy Corbett, ma'am.
She recognized the man then. He'd been with her father for several years, though she didn't know him all that well personally. He was a little older than she and her brother, so Johnny had never run around with him much like he had some of the younger hands on the ranch.
Well, Jimmy, you scared me out of 2 years' growth coming up on me out of the darkness like that.
Sorry, ma'am. Cleet told us to make sure it was you before we called out or anything, and in the darkness it was kind of hard to tell.
That's all right, Jimmy. Where's Cleet?
Jimmy pointed up a slight rise off to her right.
He's up the top of that there hill, ma'am. It's gonna be kind of bumpy riding that buckboard up there. When I should take the reins and let you ride my horse?
Truth to tell, Sarah's butt was aching from the long ride on the hurricane deck of the wagon, so she readily agreed. Even a saddle was better than the hard boards of the wagon seat and the continual bouncing of the wagon.
Sure, Jimmy. Show me the way.
It didn't take long to get Cletus and the other men awake and some fresh coffee brewed. Though Sarah much preferred hot tea, she gratefully accepted a tin mug of the strong brew to help ward off the chill of the frigid night air. She hadn't realized how cold it was when she'd left town heading out to the Jensen spread, and now she was about frozen clear through. She was about half through with her cup when Cletus finished checking out Smoke Jensen in the back of the buckboard, and he approached her next to the fire. Carl Jacoby was sitting next to her, and Dan Macklin was on the other side. Neither had asked her how she'd managed to get Jensen in the back of the wagon. They both figured she'd tell him soon enough.
Sarah, Jensen's more dead than alive in the back of that wagon. Would you hit him with an anvil?
No, just that iron crowbar under the seat.
I'd say it's about 50-50 whether he makes it through the night, what with the blood he lost, and the fact that he's not really dressed for this cold. The man's about near froze to death.
Sarah, didn't you think to cover him with a blanket or something?
No, I didn't, Carl. It's not every day I kidnap a killer and have to drive him halfway across the country in the dead of night.
Sarah shook her head. She'd put blankets in the back of the buckboard, but those were to cover him with if anyone approached. And she simply had been too miserable with her own discomfort to think much about his. She glanced over at the buckboard, hoping she hadn't inadvertently killed the man before she could tell him why she'd kidnapped him.
Calm down, Sarah. I'm having a couple of the boys carry him over here next to the fire, and I'm going to see if we can wake him up enough to get some hot coffee down him.
She felt her face flush with shame when she saw him carry Smoke Jensen's pale, limp body over and lay it next to the fire.
But, Cleet, we've got to get moving. Come morning, his wife is going to wake up, realize he's missing. We need to be as far away when that happens as we can be.
Won't matter none if we kill him in the taking, Miss Sarah. If we don't get him warmed up a little and some fluids down to replace the blood he lost, he won't make it 5 miles in the back of that wagon.
Smoke looked around him at the campfire and the men gathered around it until his eyes landed on Sarah.
Why?
Blushing, she got to her feet and moved to stand over him.
Does the name Johnny McDougal mean anything to you?
Smoke struggled up on one elbow and looked up at the angry young woman standing over him. His head felt like a blacksmith had been pounding on it, and his eyes kept blurring and trying to cross. He concentrated, pushing the pain and nausea aside, and he thought about her question. The name Johnny McDougal did stir some memories, but he couldn't quite put his finger on him just yet. He started to shake his head in a negative reply, but he stopped when the movement caused a red-hot pain to shoot through his skull. He reached up gingerly and felt the back of his head. There was a large lump there with what felt like dried blood scabbing it over. Evidently someone, probably the very same young woman standing before him now, had hit him from behind. He'd have to get to feeling better to die, he thought.
Sarah, that name is familiar to me, but I don't quite remember just why. You want to tell me about it?
She opened her mouth to speak, and he held up his hand.
Just a minute, Sarah. Could I first have some water or coffee? My throat feels as dry as a desert right now.
Sarah glanced at Cletus without saying anything, and he got to his feet, poured some coffee into a tin mug, and handed it to Smoke.
Here you go. But drink it slow so it don't come back up on you.
While Smoke drank, Sarah put her hands on her hips and stared down at him.
For your information, Mr. Smoke Jensen, Johnny McDougal was my brother. And last year about this time, you beat him up and knocked out his teeth, and then you shot him and some friends of his down in cold blood in Pueblo.
Smoke's eyes widened over the rim of the cup. He slowly lowered it and struggled up to a sitting position, trying to move his head as little as possible, his face wincing at the pain the movement caused.
That was your brother? The one dressed in all black?
Sarah nodded, her eyes as hard as flint. Smoke let his head fall into his hands and fought back nausea the coffee had caused. He thought back about that day the previous year when William Cornelius Van Horn had offered to take Smoke and his friends to lunch. Van Horn pulled the head of his Morgan toward a dining place with a sign over the door that said simply, "The Feed Bag." The others followed, tying their mounts and pack horses to a hitching rail in front of the building. The Feed Bag was set up similarly to Longmont Saloon back in Big Rock. It consisted of a large room with eating tables on one side and a bar and smaller tables for the men who just wanted to drink their meals on the other side. It was about three quarters full. Most of the men wore the canvas trousers of miners, but there was a smattering of men dressed in chaps, flannel shirts, and leather vests, who were obviously cowboys from nearby ranches. Van Horn pushed through the bat wings and walked directly toward a large table in the front corner of the room, while Smoke, Hurley, Cal, and Lewis spread out just inside the door with their backs to the wall, waiting for their eyes to adjust to the gloomy lighting. The mountain men stopped and eyed Smoke with raised eyebrows.
You expecting trouble there, Smoke?
Smoke smiled as his eyes searched the room for anyone who might be paying him special attention.
No, Rattlesnake, but I've found the best way to avoid trouble is to be ready for it when it appears.
When he saw no one was looking their way, Smoke walked on over to the table where Van Horn was already sitting down talking to a waiter, and he took his usual seat with his back to the wall and his face to the rest of the room.
I ordered us a couple of pitchers of beer to start with while we decide what food to order.
That sounds mighty good, Bill. I ain't had me no beer since last spring.
God almighty, what the hell is that smell? Somebody drank a passel of skunks in here?
The young man, who appeared to be about 20 years old, was wearing a black shirt and vest with a silver lining, and he had a brace of nickel-plated Colt peacemakers tied down low on his hips. He had four other men standing next to him, all wearing their guns in a similar manner. Rattlesnake Bob glanced at Beartooth and grimaced.
I hate it when this happens. Now we're gonna have to kill somebody before we even had our beer.
Take it easy, Rattlesnake. He's just some young tough who's letting his whiskey do his thinking for him.
You're right, Smoke. If an ever man who was drunk done got killed, there wouldn't hardly be none of us left.
Smoke continued to keep an eye on the man across the room as the bartender tried to get him to be quiet, without much success. Their waiter appeared with the beer and glasses.
Who's the man with the big mouth over there at the bar?
The waiter glanced nervously over his shoulder.
That's Johnny McDougal. His father owns the biggest ranch in these parts.
Well, I don't care if his daddy owns the Colorado Territory. You go on over there and tell that little snot if he wants to see his next birthday, he better keep his pie hole shut.
No,
I wouldn't do that, sir.
Why not?
Well, just last week, Johnny shot a man for stepping on his boots. And the man wasn't even armed at the time.
How come he's not in jail, then?
Oh, his father carries a lot of water in Pueblo. The sheriff came in and says it was in self-defense, though it was plain to everyone in the place the man wasn't wearing a gun.
So that's the lay of the land?
Yes, sir.
A few minutes later, after he'd downed another glass of whiskey, the young tough and his friends began to swagger across the room towards Smoke and his friends. Smoke and Lewis both eased their chairs back, took the hammer thongs off their colts, and waited expectantly for the trouble they knew was coming. Smoke eased his right leg out straight under the table so he'd have quicker access if he had to draw. McDougal stopped a few feet from Rattlesnake's chair and made a show of holding his nose.
Hoo-hoo! Something's awfully ripe in here. I think something done crawled in here and died.
Rattlesnake eased his hand down to the butt of the big Walker Colt in his belt. And as quick as a snake striking, he whipped it out, stood up, and whirled around, slashing the young man viciously across the face with the barrel. Before the other men could react, Rattlesnake grabbed McDougal by the hair, jerked his head back, and jammed the barrel of the gun in his mouth, knocking out his two front teeth. As McDougal's eyes opened wide, Rattlesnake eared back the hammer and grinned, his face just inches from the young tough's.
Now, what was it you was saying, mister? Something about somebody smelling overly ripe, I believe.
As one of McDougal's friends dropped his hand to his pistol, Beartooth stood up and had a skinning knife against the man's throat before he could draw.
Do you really want some of this? Because if you do, you'll have a smile that stretches from ear to ear before I'm done with you.
No, sir.
McDougal's eyes rolled back and he almost fainted from pain and embarrassment, and he sank to his knees on the floor of the restaurant. Rattlesnake shook his head in disgust, pulled the walker out of his bleeding mouth, pushed him over with his boot until McDougal was lying flat on his back. Rattlesnake waved the walker at McDougal's friends and cringed back.
You boys better take this little baby off somewhere and get him a sugar tip to suck on before he pees his pants.
The men all bent down, picked McDougal up, and helped him stagger out of the bat wings, their eyes fixed on the barrel of the walker as they left. Rattlesnake stuck the gun back in his belt and turned back to the table.
Now then, where's my beer?
After they'd eaten their fill of beefsteak, potatoes, corn, and apple pie for dessert, Van Horn threw some $20 gold pieces on the table as they walked toward the door. Just before Van Horn got to the bat wings, Lewis and Smoke stepped in front of him.
You better let us go out first, Bill.
Smoke and Lewis went through the bat wings fast, Smoke breaking to the right and Lewis to the left, their eyes on the street out in front of the feed bag. Sure enough, McDougal and his friends were lined up in the street, pistols in their hands, cocked and ready to fire. As they raised their hands to aim and shoot, Smoke and Lewis drew. The entire group of men dropped in the hail of gunfire from Smoke and Lewis. They sprawled in the muddy street, making it run red with their blood.
Damn!
Rattlesnake had started to draw his walker at the first sign of trouble, but it was still in his waistband by the time it was all over.
I ain't never seen nobody drawing fire that fast.
Smoke and Lewis walked out into the street and bent down to check on the men. They were all dead. They were so close to dying, they were no longer any risk. A few minutes later, a fat man with a tin star on his chest came running up the street.
Oh, crap.
He looked over at Smoke in the group and moved his hand toward his pistol until Smoke grinned and waggled his Colt's barrel at him.
I wouldn't do that, Sheriff. There are plenty of people in the restaurant who will say we acted in self-defense, so there's no need for you to go for that hog leg on your hip.
But that's Angus McDougal's son.
I don't care if it's the president's son, Sheriff. These men drew on us first.
Yeah, and just who are you?
My name is William Cornelius Van Horn.
Bill pulled a card from his vest pocket and handed it to the sheriff.
And if you'd like to send a wire to the United States Marshal over in Denver, I'm sure he will vouch for me.
The sheriff eyed the men standing in front of him, and he wisely decided not to make an issue of it.
All right. If it went down like you say, you're free to go, but I don't think Mr. McDougal is gonna like this.
If the man has any sense, he'll be relieved that we took that sorry son of a bitch off his hands. If he'd had any sense at all, he'd have drowned him in a barrel a long time ago.
Smoke hadn't remembered Johnny McDougal's name, but he still remembered the young man's lifeless, cold eyes that barely held a hint of humanity in them as he shot off his mouth in the saloon that day. The boy was evidently spoiled rotten and had never had to face up to the fact that people feared him because of his father's wealth, not out of any respect for him or because of any doing of his own. Smoke raised his eyes to Sarah's.
But his name was McDougal, and yours is...
Mine is McDougal, too. I lied when I told your wife it was Johnson.
Well, if Johnny was your brother, then you know how unreasonable and stupid he was when he was drinking.
What?
Think about it, Sarah. How many times before had he gotten drunk and caused trouble? Assaulted or hurt someone? Why, the day he forced us to draw on him, I'd heard he'd killed an unarmed man the week before. Did anyone from the family go and tell the poor man's wife and kids you were sorry for what your brother had done? Or did you just use your father's influence and sweep it all under the rug?
You son of a...
And did anyone from that man's family come out to the ranch and try and take Johnny prisoner? Or shoot him for what he'd done to their father?
You know that was different. The man drew on Johnny first.
Smoke started to interrupt her, but his vision suddenly narrowed and everything became dark and fuzzy. And then he tipped over and fell head first into a deep black pool. Cletus rushed to his side and felt the pulse in Smoke's neck.
He's just fainted, probably from loss of blood, though God only knows if you've managed to scramble his brains with that crowbar.
It'd serve the bastard right, especially after what he said about Johnny.
Cletus's eyes softened with sorrow, for he knew that Sarah knew that what Smoke had said was the truth, as painful as it was for her to hear it spoken out loud. They'd all tried to maintain the fiction that the man Johnny killed had been armed, but they'd never spoken of it, and the sheriff had covered up the truth from the townspeople. But out at the ranch, they'd all known how it really went down. Sarah sat there, staring into the campfire over the rim of her cup, with an occasional sideways glance at Smoke. He lay still, his chest barely rising and falling, his skin as pale as the moon on a summer night. He could hardly have looked any more lifeless if he were dead. How dare that man denigrate the memory of her brother, a man he'd callously shot down in the streets of his own town? Why, just because Johnny was a little spoiled and liked to drink and throw his weight around a little too much, that didn't mean he was a bad man. And as for that man he'd shot and killed the week before he died, her father had told her the man had a gun and that Johnny hadn't had any choice but to shoot him in self-defense. Jensen was lying about him being unarmed. He had to be. Otherwise, the sheriff would have surely arrested Johnny.
Cletus, come here a minute, will you?
Sarah got to her feet and moved away from the fire and the other men from the ranch. Cletus followed her over into the darkness at the edge of camp.
Yes?
What Jensen said about that man Johnny shot being unarmed, that was a lie, wasn't it?
Cletus pursed his lips and avoided her gaze, staring up at the stars while debating within himself how to answer her question. On the one hand, he wanted to tell her the truth, but on the other, Angus had sworn him to secrecy. Sarah was no fool. She heard him hesitate and saw the pain in his eyes when he turned him back to her.
Ah, Cleet! Why didn't Daddy tell me the truth?
I don't know, Missy. I suppose he felt it was best that you didn't know.
Then he was right about Johnny, wasn't he?
Now, Missy, just because Johnny was a little rough around the edges sometimes didn't give anyone the right to shoot him down in cold blood, no matter how drunk he was or what he may have said to them.
Sarah nodded distractedly, but she was thinking, what if Johnny did more than just shoot his mouth off? What if he'd drawn on Jensen and his men as Jensen maintained he did? What would she do then? Could she stand to take this man to her father where he would be killed if he were in fact innocent of any wrongdoing? She moved over closer to the fire, chilled by more than the freezing air around her now. She had some tough decisions to make, and for once, she wouldn't have her father to guide her in the making of them. Somehow, before they arrived back at the ranch, she would have to decide just who was telling the truth about what had happened last year in the streets of Pueblo.
We better get a move on, Cleet. Jensen's wife is going to wake up before too long, and then we're going to have a posse to deal with if we're not a lot of miles away from here.
Cletus looked over at Jensen, whose chest was rising and falling rapidly with shallow breaths.
I don't know, Missy. If we move him now, he's liable to start bleeding inside his head or something. Angus ain't gonna like it if we bring him back a corpse.
He also won't like it much if his only daughter is arrested and hung for kidnapping, Cleet. Now either we get a move on and Jensen takes his chances, or we shoot him here and leave him for the buzzards to find.
Damn, but you're just like your old man. Headstrong and stubborn as a mule.
Sarah smiled and reached up to pat Cletus's cheek. Something a man would have gotten shot trying.
I take that as a compliment, Cleet. Now get a move on. Please.
3 hours later, just as the sun was edging over mountain peaks to the east, smoke rolled over in the back of the buckboard and got up on his hands and knees. His head hung down and he vomited until he thought he was going to bring up his toes. Cletus, who was riding on the hurricane deck, looked back over his shoulder and grimaced at the nasty sight.
Crap! Now you're going to have to ride in that the rest of the way home.
Smoke glared up at him, his face pasty and pale, his eyes sunken and surrounded by black. Suddenly, his lips curled in a smile that made the hair on the back of Cletus's neck stand up. He'd never seen anything as dangerous looking in his whole life.
What are you grinning at, Jensen? It appears to me like you got precious little to smile at.
Mister, I was just thinking about how good it's going to feel when I make all of you pay for this. Ordinarily, I get no pleasure from killing men. But for this group, I'm going to have to make an exception.
Only one's going to get killed around here is you, Jensen.
Cletus turned back around to face the horses before Jensen could see the fear in his eyes. Eyes that had never been made to show fear before.
Better men than you and these mangy coyotes riding with you have tried to plant me forked end up, mister. And I'm still kicking.
Sarah gently spurred Cletus's horse she was riding and pulled the animal up next to the bed of the wagon where Smoke sat with his back to her.
Yeah, but you ain't never killed no McDougal before neither, Jensen.
If you're talking about that man named Johnny I shot at Pueblo last year, the only thing special about him was his capacity to drink enough liquor to make him both stupid and dangerous.
Yeah, Johnny could put the tonsil pain away all right, but that didn't give you no right to beat him near half to death and then shoot him full of lead.
What's wrong with you people? Didn't anybody ask the sheriff what had happened? There were plenty of witnesses to the whole thing.
All we heard was that Johnny got pistol whipped and all his teeth were knocked out. And then he and his friends got shot down without being able to get off any shots themselves. That don't exactly sound like no fair fight to me, Jensen.
I'll try one more time. Then I'm done talking. Johnny had a snootful of liquor and came over to our table and braced the men I was with, saying they stunk like skunks and garbage. Well, it's no surprise that one of the mountain men I was with took offense at his remarks and proceeded to beat the crap out of him. Which he no doubt deserved. Now, after Johnny got knocked flat on his back, his friends came over and carried him outside. Later, after we finished our supper, we walked out the door. Johnny and his friends were standing there in the street with their hands filled with iron. We had no choice but to shoot.
You that good, Jensen? You can draw and kill a man who's already got his pistol out?
Why don't you try me, mister, and find out for yourself? Or do you let a mob do your fighting for you? You got the balls for it? Give me a gun, and we'll see if I'm fast enough to take the lot of you.
Cletus gritted his teeth and looked ahead. A lot of what the man said made sense. He'd loved Johnny like his own son, but that didn't mean the little bastard wasn't mad dog mean when he'd been drinking. He shook his head. It could well have gone down just like Jensen said, but if it did, why didn't Sheriff Tupper tell it that way to Angus? Sarah, who was wondering the same thing, flicked a riding crop at Smoke and got his attention.
That isn't exactly the way the sheriff tells it, Mr. Jensen, and why would he lie about it?
Your father has a reputation of not listening to people who tell him what he doesn't want to hear, Sarah. My guess is the sheriff was too scared to tell him his little boy got killed because he got drunk and let his mouth override his butt. Truth be told, Johnny wasn't near as tough or as fast with a gun as the liquor made him think he was. And he seemed too busy showing off for all his friends to think straight about it.
You bastard!
Cleety shook his head as he watched Sarah gallop off up ahead of the column of men.
Boy, you sure know how to end a conversation.
I guess her father's not the only one who doesn't like to be told the truth, especially when her mind's already made up on a subject.
Sally woke up just as the sun was coming up and brightening the bedroom. She stuck out her right hand and felt around the bed for her husband. When she didn't feel Smoke next to her, she opened her eyes and rolled on her side. His side of the bed was smooth, and his pillow was unwrinkled. She sat up straight, rubbing sleep out of her eyes. Evidently, he hadn't come to bed last night, because she'd never known him to get up early and make his side of the bed while she was still sleeping. Something was wrong. She jumped out of bed and got dressed. As she was heading for the door, she noticed that Smoke's hat and guns were hanging on the peg next to the front door. He would never have gone anywhere without them. She crossed the porch and ran to the bunkhouse. Cal opened the door. It was just about time for the cowboys to rise, but it was evident Cal hadn't had his morning coffee just yet.
Oh, hi, Miss Sally.
Cal, have any of you seen Smoke this morning?
Why, no, Miss Sally. We just got up and we ain't seen nobody yet.
Oh, damn. Did you see or hear anything out of the ordinary last night?
Cal shook his head, his expression changing to one of alarm at her questions. Without saying anything else, she turned back toward the barn and took off at a dead run. She wanted to go and see if Smoke's horse was still there, though she knew he'd never gotten on his horse and left without saying something to her, or at least grabbing his hat and guns from the cabin.
Parley! Something's wrong! Get on out here!
20 minutes later, the three of them sat at the kitchen table in the ranch house. Sally had put some coffee on to boil while she told him about Smoke's mysterious absence.
And he didn't say nothing about going nowheres when you went to bed last night?
No. He went out onto the porch to have a cigar and a cup of coffee before he came to bed, and he said he'd see me in a while.
It ain't like Smoke to just take off without telling nobody, especially if there was trouble brewing.
Pearly moved out onto the front porch and began to look around, even getting down on his knees to get a better look at the ground around the porch.
Look here.
He pointed to a half-smoked cigar lying on the ground next to the porch, and a cup that still held a third of a cup of cold coffee in it on the arm of Smoke's wooden chair.
Looks like something spooked him, or at least made him throw down his cigar and leave his coffee before he's through with either one.
You see any tracks, Cal?
Yeah, most of them head over to the bunkhouse, but looks like two sets go off down the road that-a-way. And see one? One set looks smaller, like it might be a woman or maybe a boy.
You're right, Cal. And these are from last night, too.
How can you tell that?
Here, see how the other tracks are crusted over where they've been wet by dew that's dried a few times? Well, these here fresh tracks are still soft and damp, so they've only had the dew fall on them once and they haven't dried yet. So they must have been made last night.
Pearly, follow the tracks and show us where they lead.
Pearly followed the tracks, walking bent over like an old man as the tracks led him down the road away from the Jensen's cabin. Finally, he stopped and pointed.
Look there, Miss Sally. Tracks of a buckboard right here where these two sets stop.
Shoot, that's not much help. Everyone in the valley has a buckboard.
Yeah, And following those buckboard tracks once they get on the main road will be impossible.
Oh, maybe. But these tracks show the iron on the wheels to be brand new. Look at how sharp the edges of the tracks are. They ain't worn at all. Don't you see? All we have to do is ask Jed the blacksmith who's had their wheels re-ironed lately, and we'll know who was here.
Pearly, you're a genius.
By the time they got to Big Rock, it was almost 9 o'clock in the morning, and they rode directly to Jed Blankenship's blacksmith shop.
Oh, no!
There was a sign on the door that was too small for the boys to read from their horses.
What's it say, Miss Sally?
Jed's not here. He's gone to Silver City to help his brother who broke his leg. He won't be back for at least a week.
You want me to hightail it over to Silver City and see what he has to say?
No. It'll probably be quicker just to divide up the ranches around town, and all of us ride around asking whose buckboard it might be.
Yeah, maybe it's something simple, like one of your neighbors came by last night asking Smoke for help.
No. If that were the case, Smoke would still have had time to either wake me up or to get his hat and guns from the rack next to the door. You know he never leaves the house without them.
That's right, Miss Sally. And if one of our neighbors needed Smoke's help, he would have asked either you or Cal or me to come along.
Yes. So I suspect Smoke is in some kind of trouble. And it's up to us to figure out who took him, and then make sure we get him back.
You know, it might be kind of dangerous for you to go riding up to the ranches asking about where Smoke is. If they took him and you show up, you're liable to get shot.
Sally smiled grimly and patted the snub-nosed .36 caliber Smith & Wesson revolver on her hip.
It won't be dangerous for me, boys. It'll be dangerous for whoever took Smoke.
Speaking of that, why don't we ask Monty and Lewis to help us look for him? That sure cut down the time it's going to take to find that buckboard.
Hell, they might even know whose it is.
Good idea, Cal. Let's ride on over to Longmont's and see who's in.
Sally sent Pearly to the sheriff's office while she and Cal walked directly to Longmont Saloon. As much a cafe as a drinking and gambling establishment, the place was half full of patrons eating one of Chef Andre's magnificent breakfasts. Lewis was, as usual, sitting at his private table drinking strong coffee and smoking a thin black cheroot. When he saw Sally and Cal, he immediately put the cigar out and got to his feet, motioning them over to his table.
Good morning, Sally. Cal, will Smoke be joining us this morning?
No, Lewis, but Pearly will be here shortly with Sheriff Carson.
Smoke seems to have disappeared sometime last night, Lewis.
Do you have any idea what happened?
No, everything was normal when I went to bed last night. Smoke said he was going to have a cigar and a cup of coffee on the porch, and he would be right in. I fell asleep. Then I woke up this morning, and he was nowhere to be found.
Just then, Monty Carson, sheriff of Big Rock, joined him, along with Pearly.
Pearly's told me the gist of things, Sally. Are you sure Smoke didn't leave of his own accord? Maybe because this woman or boy came by needing help?
No, Monty. His guns and his hat were still on the peg next to the door.
Monty glanced at Lewis. They both knew Smoke would no more leave his house without his hat and guns than he would walk down Main Street naked. There were just too many men roaming around the country who'd like nothing better than to catch Smoke Jensen unarmed and defenseless.
You're right, Sally. I'm sure foul play's involved here.
Sheriff, we found some tracks of a buckboard with new iron rims on the wheels. Tracks make it look like Smoke went off in the buckboard.
New rims, huh? Guess I better go on over to Jed's and see who's had new rims put on lately.
Won't do, Monty. We've been there. Jed's out of town for a few days on over to Silver City.
He at his brother's place?
Monty got to his feet.
I'll go by the telegraph office and send a wire to the sheriff there asking him to take a ride out to Jed's brother's place, see if he can find out what we need to know.
Meanwhile, we can split up and ride out to some of the nearby ranches and take a look at their wagons.
I don't know if that's such a good idea, Lewis. If Smoke was took against his will, whoever took him ain't gonna welcome any questions with open arms.
You're right, Monty. We need to go in posse strength at least, since we don't know how many men we're dealing with here.
Why don't y'all just sit here and have some breakfast? Shouldn't take more than a couple hours to get an answer from the sheriff over at Silver City. Then we can all go together and find out just what's going on.
I don't know if I can just sit here without doing something, Monty. Not while Smoke is in danger.
I know it's tough, Sally, but you won't be doing him any good if you go out and get caught by the same people.
You're correct, Monty. I am being foolish.
No, you're not. You're just being a wife who's worried about a man. Nothing wrong with that.
You know, Sheriff, I just don't hardly think it's anybody from around here took Smoke. Hell, everybody that lives within 50 miles of Big Rock is good friends with Smoke and Sally.
You're probably right, Pearly. But there ain't been no suspicious strangers hanging around town for the past couple of weeks. Now we got to start looking somewhere.
You're right, Monty. Why don't you go over to the telegraph office while we have some breakfast?
As they rode down the trail toward Pueblo and home, Sarah McDougal struggled with her conscience. The more she was around Smoke Jensen, the less he seemed like a crazed gunfighter out to kill anyone who got in his way, and the more he seemed like an honest, decent human being. She thought back to when Sheriff Tupper had come to give her and her father the news of Johnny's death. As she went over what he'd said on that visit, she realized that she and her father hadn't really heard what he was trying to say. He'd tried to tell him in his own mealy-mouthed way that it was Johnny's fault he'd been shot. Of course, neither she nor her father had been willing to listen to that explanation, not when their kin was lying dead in the back of Tupper's wagon, his teeth knocked out and his body full of a stranger's lead.
Missy.
Yes?
I think it's time we took a noonan and rested our mounts. We keep going at this pace, we're going to lose a couple of them for too long. And I don't hanker to carry none of these boys on my back.
All right.
Sarah pointed to a copse of trees off to the right about 100 yards ahead.
Pull over there and we'll fix up some grub for the men and give the horses some grain and water.
She glanced down sideways at Smoke, who was riding in the back of the wagon.
Jensen, don't you go getting any ideas about trying to make a break for it. My father wants you brought back alive, but he won't quibble if you're killed trying to escape.
This is your party, Sarah. I'm just along for the ride. Besides, if I tried to run right now, I think my head would fall off.
You keep thinking like that and you may just survive this trip.
What about the homecoming? Will I survive that too?
Sarah's face flushed even more, and she spurred her horse on up ahead to tell the men to ready the camp without trying to give Smoke an answer. While Cletus oversaw the cooking of fatback and beans and heating the coffee, Sarah walked over to stand next to Smoke, who was sitting with his back to a tree, while two men held pistols on him from a short distance away.
You understand why I'm doing this, don't you, Mr. Jensen?
Of course I do, Sarah. You've lost a brother, and your father has lost a son. Neither one of you wants to admit to yourselves that it might have been your fault for not making him grow up better. So you're planning on taking it out on me. It's simple when you think about it. I'm to be a scapegoat for your dad's failure as a parent and your failure as a sister.
That's not true. I'm taking you back because you must be punished for what you did.
Punished for defending myself. For doing what the law should have done a long time ago when your brother killed his first man.
Oh, you're just impossible.
Sarah walked quickly over to stand next to Cletus at the campfire.
It's not easy being judge, jury, and executioner, Sarah. I don't think you're going to like the job much.
Cletus glanced up at her as he poured her a cup of coffee and handed it to her, noticing the redness of her eyes and her hunched over shoulders and stiff neck.
He getting your goat, Missy?
Yes. He twists everything around so you think he should get a medal for shooting Johnny instead of
being killed in cold blood by your daddy or you?
I didn't say that.
No, but you know that's what's going to happen, don't you? You're not fooling yourself into thinking anything different, are you?
I guess I know what's going to happen.
Good. Because if you're going to do this, you better be able to live with it or it'll eat you alive. You better figure you're right, and it needs doing. Otherwise, maybe you ought to ride on ahead and let me take him the rest of the way.
Don't treat me like a baby, Cleet.
I'm not, Missy. But I can see by looking in your eyes you got some doubts about all this. I've known men out on the trail did something that got one of their friends killed. Most of them knew it comes with the job of cowboying, but a few never got over it. Their lives were plumb ruined by one little mistake that could have happened to anybody. I don't want that to happen to you, Missy.
Yes, I do have some doubts, Cleet.
What if what he says happened is the true story? What if he had no choice but to shoot Johnny in self-defense?
What really happened don't make me know, never mind. I take my orders from your daddy, and he said to bring this man to him. As far as what happens then, it ain't no concern of mine.
So you won't feel responsible when daddy shoots this man you're taking to him?
Responsible? Hell no. Not unless I pull the trigger myself.
And would you do that? If my father told you to?
I don't know, Missy. I just don't know.
I'm ashamed of us both, Cleet. You for not being man enough to take responsibility for what you're doing. And me for not finding out the truth about what happened before taking Jensen prisoner.
After they'd eaten and fed the horses, Cletus called three men over to him.
Bob, you and Billy and Juan head on back down our back trail. Take your rifles and plenty of ammunition along with you. Anybody comes up the trail looks like they're following us. You slow them down.
What if it's a big posse, Cleet?
There's plenty of places along here where you boys can get the high ground, Bob. You do that, and you ought to be able to hold the trail against a dozen men or more if you have to.
You want us to kill them?
Not unless you absolutely have to, boys. Just shoot close enough to make them think twice about following us. I don't want to start a war here by killing some lawmen and deputies. Not unless there's no other way.
But, boss, if there is no other way, then what should we do?
Try for the horses first, the men last. But keep them off our backs until we get to the ranch. Understand?